The views expressed on the show do not necessarily reflect the views of Asheville FM or Friends of Community Radio.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I am William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWALP in Olympia, Washington, WCRSLP in Columbus, Ohio, and on the pirate station Berkeley Liberation Radio in Berkeley. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org for as long as the internet lasts us. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, and you can send us snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop. This week, we're speaking with Ruddy Turnstone of the Global Justice Ecology Project and BJ McManima of the Indigenous Environmental Network about the issue of genetically engineered trees, their ecological and social impacts, and of the action camp to take place just outside of Asheville, North Carolina, on September 24th through 27th. More on this issue can be found at nogetrees.org.
But first, an announcement from freeedian.wordpress.com. Quote, we've just learned that Edian's public defender that he, in fact, can be bailed out despite violating his probation. His bail is $50,000, so we need $5,000 to bail him out. Edian is currently doing okay in jail, but strongly wants to be bailed out and desires that all money be used for that first and later for his legal defense. Edian was initially charged with second-degree felony assault and battery by a mob, as well as third-degree misdemeanor assault and battery. He also has the additional charge of breach of peace of a high and aggravated nature for allegedly breaking the windows of a KKK member's pickup truck. You can donate to Edian's defense/bail fund at freeedian, that's freeedian.wordpress.com. Benefits of any kind are welcome. If you want to get in touch with us about any details, shoot us an email at free.edian@gmail.com. Here's some background on the case. Edian was one of six arrested at an anti-KKK demonstration on July 18th in Columbia, South Carolina. On that date, around 2,000 people showed up to confront the Klan, whose rally was cut short out of concerns for, quote, public safety, unquote. In a historic show of opposition, a rowdy and diverse crowd of gangs, black nationalists, anarchists, and various anti-racists humiliated the Klan and their Nazi counterparts and literally chased them out of town. A short zine about the demonstration could be found at ruinsofcapital.noblogs.org. And now a few words from anarchist prisoner Sean Swain. What you say, what you say, what you say,
what? Come like a bomb! We live in an inherently twisted society that punishes those who rob banks, rather than punishing those who manage them. This seems more than just a little bit unreasonable to me, given that the obscenely wealthy shouldn't store all of their ill-gotten loot in concentrated places, and then irrationally expect the rest of us not to have designs on divesting them of it. Banks are the most prominent symbol for our culture's blind adherence to the institution of property. The fact that thousands upon thousands of banks open up bright and early 6 days a week and close at the end of business with rarely ever a single robbery speaks to just how completely we are caught up in the delusion of capitalism's legitimacy. Some of the most famous figures of American history were bank robbers: Jesse James, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Bonnie and Clyde, John Dillinger. Robin Hood is a kind of universal archetype, the model bank robber, from an era before the existence of banks. It's both curious and appalling that we have these buildings all around us just filled with cash, while many of us are barely scraping by and struggling for fundamental necessities. We routinely walk past these cash warehouses with holes in our shoes and our stomachs grumbling. A friend of mine, who was more often a successful bank robber than he was an unsuccessful one, shared with me his observation that during bank robberies, police never want to catch bank robbers inside the bank. There's an old movie called Dog Day Afternoon, where two bank robbers are inside the bank when police arrive, and the robbery turns into a prolonged hostage situation. Police want to avoid that. So, according to my bank robber friend, they never respond immediately. They'd rather let you get out of the bank where you can get arrested on the street, or chase you, or follow you with helicopters. So that gives you some time to grab a substantial amount of cash. Also, according to my friend, most bank tellers are trained to do as you instruct. So if you hand them a note with instructions not to trigger the alarm in the drawer, not to include dye packs in the money bag, and not to put a GPS locator in with the cash, they're supposed to comply. Banks don't want tellers to defy bank robbers, get caught doing it, and end up getting somebody killed. For a period of time in the late 1990s, bank robbery had one of the highest rates of unsolved crimes. Robbing banks was pretty fashionable. In fact, in the Cleveland area, there was one guy who successfully robbed several banks, and in each robbery, he left on foot. The guy didn't even have a car. Authorities voiced a hunch that he was probably homeless. Well, he was homeless when he started the crime spree anyway. I would suggest that in this modern era, bank robbery is no longer bank robbery. Consider, in 2008, when greedy banksters bottomed out the global economy, George W. Bush and his Treasury Secretary, Larry Summers, who was himself an alumni of the Lehman Brothers Citibank locker room, decided the big banks were too big to fail. And they offered billions of dollars in bailouts. They gave the banksters money that the government took from you in taxes. When Obama came into office, he got together with his Treasury guy, Timothy Geithner, also an alumni from the same crowd of usual suspects, and they continued the billion-dollar bailouts. So that means all of those banks that won't willingly give you any loans have their vaults and registers filled up with your money. So I would suggest to you that it's not robbery to take what's already yours. It's reappropriation. That's no crime. The real crime is letting a single bank get away with keeping it. Think about it. To be successful, all you really need are pistols, ski masks, duffel bags, and an assertive sense of indignation. If we all did it, you know, like setting up an International Bank Fund Reappropriation Day or something, the whole banking system would collapse. It would cease to exist. We would have a future without banks. So, if you dream of such a future just as I do, I encourage you to act. After all, that dream is too big to fail. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional Institution in Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at his new address by directing it to Sean Swain, 243-205, Warren, CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio, 45036. For updates on his situation, his bid for U.S. president in 2016, and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org. Firstly, will you both introduce yourself and talk a little bit about what you do?
Go ahead, Ruddy.
Hi, my name is Ruddy. Ruddy Turnstone with the Global Justice Ecology Project. I wear many hats. Today I'm wearing that hat. I'm not wearing that hat. I am an Everglades Earth Firster and a direct action climb trainer for a variety of groups across the so-called U.S. But I am the GE Trees campaigner, the Genetically Engineered Trees campaigner for Global Justice Ecology Project. And I help raise awareness and network and make connections about the dangers of genetically engineered trees with not just Global Justice Ecology Project, but also the campaign to stop GE trees.
Yes, my name is BJ McManima. It's Brenda Jo McManima. Most people call me BJ. And I work for, and like Ruddy, I wear many hats. I work for the Indigenous Environmental Network. I've been with them in different capacities for about 10 years now, maybe a little bit more. I'm their web person and social media admin, and now I'm also the representative for IEN on the campaign to stop GE trees and on the steering committee. I've worked in many capacities over the years on different projects. We are most concerned about GE trees, genetically engineered trees, because of the very imminent danger they cause to biodiversity and a number of our human, social, and environmental rights.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you all both talk about the Global Justice Ecology Project and related projects in the fight against GE trees? When did the resistance to it start, and who are some of the participants, and what are the group's main focus apart from genetically engineered trees?
Yeah. So Global Justice Ecology Project was founded in 2003 to look for and create programs to address the common root causes of social injustice, ecological destruction, and economic domination. One of the main issues that we address, and our founders, Oren Langell and Peterman and their board, have addressed since 1999, is genetically engineered trees. And GGEP, we've taken on this issue as it is a perfect example of the intertwining of ecological, social, and economic injustice. We have companies like Arborgen making secret plans to develop plantations of GE loblolly pine trees, but no government or public oversight. And so we literally have been working on this issue for over 15 years. Genetic engineering of trees happened for over 20 years globally. So our main focus is GE trees, and when we are not focusing on GE trees simultaneously, yeah, not so much when we are not, but simultaneously, we are definitely working to uplift frontline communities, their struggles through our media projects, and we work with KPFK in California to highlight frontline communities. We have a speakers bureau of impacted and frontline communities about various issues all over the globe. So these are some of the things. Our main projects are social media outreach, highlighting impacted communities, and genetically engineered trees.
Is that a KPFK, a radio station in California?
It is.
Awesome.
Yes.
Are they mostly a radical radio station, or do they do other things too?
They're the public radio, not as awesomely radical as The Final Straw, but as far as I understand, but yeah, they definitely cover a variety of issues.
Cool. And BJ, would you care to talk about a little bit about the other groups that you mentioned? There was one about Indigenous solidarity.
We're very much, for the last 25 years, ours has been, our mission is to build capacity. And we work for communities, frontline communities, underrepresented communities. We help them get the tools they need to resist not only this threat of GE trees, but also for food security, extreme energy extraction, and we've been doing so, like I said, for about 25 years. GE trees is just another element of what we do, and we have to inform our tribal governments and our tribal communities on the reservation and outside the reservation about what they can do to keep an eye on things for us. We can't do it all. So one of our main goals is to build awareness and to get the tools to these people that they need. And that includes traditional media, social media, personal outreach, handing them things that they can use for city, town, village, reservation, legislation that, you know, will prevent this from happening, especially GE trees on their land. We work loosely with the EPA. We do other, we work with other agencies as we can. We usually steer away from government, but when necessary, we do negotiate with them. But it's mainly with the people. Some of the other groups that we work with on the steering committee are World Rainforest Movement, Biofuel Watch. Help me out, Reddy.
Eco Nexus.
Thank you.
And you're right here in Asheville, aren't you, BJ?
I am, yes. Most of our people, almost all of our people, work remotely. We have a core group in Bemidji, Minnesota, but we also have people out in North Dakota. We have them here in the Southeast. We have them, people that we work with just about everywhere in California, up around the Great Lakes, Northeast.
That sounds really, really cool, all of that. To get more into the issue of genetically engineered trees, you mentioned a corporation called Arborgen. What are some of the other corporations who are promoting the use of these trees, and what are the trees stated to be used for?
Mainly the loblolly pine as I understand it, they have made it denser, and so therefore it would be more suitable for building materials and pulp production. I believe they're also looking at it for bioenergy, biofuel. Eucalyptus is probably the one that's going to take over the Southeast if we don't stop them. And those will definitely be for feedstock and for bioenergy production. We also have poplars. There's a black willow, I believe.
There's a variety of poplars and cottonwoods that they're testing on. Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Willow itself?
And most of it is for commercial use. It's for pulp production, paper, building materials, and it's touted as a viable solution or viable replacement for fossil fuels in a great number of applications, which it's not, basically, and it's been proven it's not.
I would imagine that last point would be just ecologically disastrous if it were in any way used as a replacement for fossil fuels.
It's one of the ones, but they really want to commercialize it. Right now in the Southeast, there are huge swaths of forests that are being clear cut to make wood pellets to be shipped to Europe for their energy generation, for their biofuels, and for their bioenergy. What's going to happen is these forests that used to be forests are most likely going to be planted in genetically engineered trees, which are genetically engineered to grow faster, have more terpene, which means more BTUs, more heat to them. They're going to be planted in huge swaths of, you know, hundreds of acres if they get their way. And that's going to increase the use of pesticides and herbicides. And these rotations, from what I've read, the forests now that are used commercially are usually on a 25 to 40 year cycle. So, but when we plant these GE trees, that cycle is going to be accelerated or taken minimized, actually. And they're talking about 5 to 8 year cycles. And they're also saying that this is going to be a carbon sink. This is going to be a solution to our climate change. Not when they're going to cut them down every 5 to 10 years, because then we're going to be putting the carbon back into the atmosphere along with other dangerous greenhouse gases, along with microscopic particulates that our respiratory systems and most living creatures' respiratory systems do not have any defenses for, meaning they will come into our system unimpeded. So, and of course, you know, they say that that's not going to happen. They'll have scrubbers and they'll do this and they'll do that, but we all know what those promises usually turn out to be.
It sounds like a classic case of corporate greenwashing in a way.
It's a huge greenwash, yes.
It's one of the largest, not one of the largest, but it is a giant greenwashing scheme that is a very dangerous false solution to climate change.
What they're essentially doing is they're boiling the frog. I don't know if people out there or you are even familiar with that term, but they are slowly kind of brainwashing people into, you know, not even paying any attention to this because it's green, you know, it's renewable, it's sustainable, it's this, it's that. When you boil the frog, if you try to throw a frog into boiling water all at once, it'll jump out, most likely. Anyway, but if you put that frog in tepid water and just keep heating the water just a little bit, just turn up that heat, turn up that gas, you can boil the frog. So that's what I always tell people. They're doing it gradually. And they're doing it so that we're not going to be paying attention. We're here to make people pay attention.
Would you now describe the difference between large monoculture tree plantations, which is meaning plantations made up of just one variety of tree, and specifically genetically engineered tree plantations? What are some of the dangers associated with having genetically engineered trees on such a large scale? I read a little bit about contamination in natural forests of genetically engineered pollen, among other things?
Right.
The first thing that we have to make clear is monoculture in any form is not sustainable in anyone's reality. The problem is with the genetically engineered trees, they're putting trees in areas where they're not, first of all, native. Eucalyptus is not native to this continent. And more herbicides, more pesticides have to be used. And the pollen, specifically in Brazil, where eucalyptus pollen is used in conjunction with bees, honeybees, they have the eucalyptus honey. They also have organic eucalyptus. Not exactly sure how that works, but it's eucalyptus that isn't treated with any chemicals or herbicides, pesticides, and therefore they sell their honey with that organic designation. Once GE eucalyptus, and they've already approved this in Brazil, it will challenge and it will change that designation. They probably will no longer be able to say it's organic. But most likely, I mean, trees live for a very, very long time, and their pollen and their seeds spread in large, you know, vast areas. And so we don't know. That's the crux of it. We don't know what's going to happen. And the research and the development and the things that they're putting into these, this foreign DNA into these trees, we don't know what this is going to do. The loblolly pine is probably a good example. Making the tree denser, there's a woodpecker, maybe, and I can't remember the name right now, I'm sorry, but it's an endangered woodpecker, and the loblolly pine forests are their native habitat. So what happens when these trees cross-pollinate with the natural forests and the loblolly pines become denser? We all know how woodpeckers, you know, get the bugs and the worms out of the tree. What happens, we don't know. You know, if it's denser, will the bugs or the worms even be able to burrow into the trees so that the woodpeckers can eat? So it's not just one thing that we're worried about. It's the entire regenerative properties of biodiversity in these forests. You take one element and you change it, and the domino effect, we don't know where that last domino is going to fall.
Absolutely.
I want to reiterate that tree plantations are not and never will be forests. So what we're looking at right now is current tree plantations that exist, as BJ mentioned, are pesticide-ridden, herbicide-ridden, void of biodiversity because it's just merely inaccessible to most species because it's treated to be a monoculture. And when you're adding genetic engineering, one of the large problems on a non-scientific level is that so much of this genetic engineering has either corporate backing, government funding, it has a capitalist drive and a motive behind it. This isn't science for science's sake. This is science for the progress of industrial capitalism. And that is one of the largest dangers, one of many, in addition to the contamination, the unknown testing, because when we're looking at genetically engineered trees, trees, unlike other monocrop plantations such as soy and wheat, which are also devastating socially and ecologically, they're short rotation crops. When we're looking at trees, it's one of the few species that has a long, long lifespan, and so the testing has to be long term. When you combine that with the motive of profit and industrial capitalism, with the modes of why they're genetically engineering trees, the fact that they're engineering trees to increase paper production, that they're engineering trees to increase the use of wood for building products, that they're engineering them for pesticide resistance, to actually have pesticides and herbicides inside them already for biofuels and to be processed for biomass incineration. These genetically engineered trees are being created to fuel industrial capitalism, which is driving us into a climate catastrophe. One of the biggest things is they are absolutely a false solution to climate change and will maintain us on an absolutely ecologically and socially devastating path.
That was super, super well said. Did I hear you correctly that the trees themselves produce a kind of pesticide, or some of them do?
They have created trees that do, yes.
Right. Genetic engineering, test plots that are active today, some poplars are engineered to have BT inside them. And so BT is a bacteria that a lot of organic consumers, even growers, will use, and it's used on organic crops. The problem is that when you actually spray it with normal usage, it will dissipate, and it doesn't have as bad of impacts. Like, it's pretty relatively comparable to other pesticides, mild on the environment. But when it's active in every single cell of a species of an actual organism, it maintains its absolute potent virulence the whole time as long as the species is alive. And so it is more dangerous and more deadly to insects and to other species, butterflies, because it's actually genetically engineered into every single cell of the organism.
People have to understand that this isn't the natural way that we have improved our agriculture over the millennia, pretty much. This isn't, you know, bat crosses, this isn't cross-pollinization, this isn't grafting, this is nothing like that. Because if those aren't going to work, they don't work, the plant dies. This is physically and forcibly inserting genetic material from totally unrelated organisms into the DNA of these plants and these trees. A wheat gene into the chestnut, and like Ruddy just pointed out, the bacteria that's put into the poplars as a pesticide. So, you know, this, and in our world, in our life ways, everything in this world has energy, has a spirit, has a reason to live. We call it their original instructions. When you change that makeup, when you change that, you've taken the spirit away from this plant. You've taken the spirit away from this tree, and they are no longer a viable part of our natural world. That's what is egregious to us, and commodifying nature, commodifying the air and the land, and making it money. And it's not. You know, once you ruin it, it's ruined. There really is no way to bring it back.
Agreed. Yeah, and I hate to harp on the whole pesticides thing too, but I would imagine that would do a number on other non-target, I suppose, insects and, like you said, butterflies and pollinators and birds and small animals. I would imagine that would really do a number on the local smaller animals and bugs and stuff, as well as maybe target insects or whatever.
Well, even the fungus, even the mushrooms, even the little plants are medicine plants. And if the insects that you've killed, you know, they're collateral damage, you've interrupted the food chain.
You're listening to WSFMLP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I am William Goodenough. I feel like we could talk a lot about the ecologically devastating implications of these trees, but just for the issue of time, I'd love to move on to how it is affecting human populations as well. Would you talk about the encroachment by genetically engineered tree plantations on native forests and on the displacement of indigenous folks, as well as people doing subsistence or small-scale farming?
Right now, having the GE tree plantations isn't exactly the issue. Monoculture tree plantations like palm oil and the eucalyptus, the non-GE form right now, are being used as carbon credits or carbon sinks with the United Nations, one of their climate schemes. And so what happens is that the indigenous people, mostly in the global south and in Southeast Asia, are being evicted from their homelands, from the places they've lived for, you know, thousands of years. And they're not allowed to go back. That in itself is wrong. But then what they'll do is they'll go in and they will take down part of that forest and they'll replant it with currently the non-GE forms of trees. What's going to happen is that this is now going to be replaced, if we don't stop them, with genetically engineered trees. But the human rights issues are many, and they're documented. Even the World Bank documented, and we all know how evil the World Bank is, but even they documented the human rights abuses that have taken place in third world countries.
God, that's got to say something.
I was surprised to see that, yes. And they were very candid about it and pretty right on and quite in depth. And people don't realize this. What's happening, and everything's connected, you know. You can talk it spiritually, you can talk it practically. And practically, what is happening is, here in the developed world, we have our chemical plants and our petrol plants and our extreme extractive industries who now are positioning themselves to buy their carbon credits so that they're carbon neutral. But what's happening is they're still doing exactly what they're doing here. They're poisoning our people. They're, you know, still pumping out the GHGs and doing everything that they're not supposed to. But since they bought these credits in this faraway land that evicted the people that have lived there forever, they can now say that they are doing their part to combat climate change and to combat the damage and the pollution. That's what's evil. And that's what's happening right now. And it's been happening for the last couple, 3 decades.
And this is through the RED program, right, BJ?
Yes, yes. And they are kind of curtailing the use of RED because we have been successful in identifying RED as the evil that it is. And so now they're kind of like skirting around it and just calling it what it is, which is carbon credits, carbon offsets, etc., and building capacity in these third world countries.
And what is RED for listeners that don't know, that haven't heard that term before?
It is reducing environmental destruction and devastation. And what I just explained to you about the carbon credits and people buying these credits, and what happens is the money that they put into this usually goes to an inept, you know, probably the best way to say it, or criminal government. They take the money, and some of that money is supposed to go to the people to relocate them off from their property. But usually that doesn't happen. If they get anything at all, it's usually a shanty town or a tent city with absolutely no services and no support, and they no longer can support themselves in a subsistence manner. And we've been fighting this for 10 years or more. So, yeah, so DE trees are just another part of it. And as Ruddy pointed out, government funding is ready and available. In fact, behind the scenes, they're offering it. So what we're worried about is our tribal nations here in the global north are going to be coerced into, because some of them have managed for us, they're going to be coerced into planting GE trees, and it's going to be touted as economic development, and it'll make it so much better.
I want to touch a little bit about encroachment on native forests and a couple other impacts with GE trees. In terms of encroachment on native forests, a few months ago, the first genetically engineered tree was approved for commercialization in Brazil, and that was a eucalyptus. The same sort of ideas and slogans that they're using in Brazil is very similar to what they're using here. And I live in so-called Florida, in South Florida, and it's one of the few places in the so-called U.S. where eucalyptus can actually grow and survive. In South Florida, and it's touted by farmers and growers as if we can grow eucalyptus, it will save. We can farm those and we can extract from those eucalyptus farms so we can save our other forests. And so in terms of encroachment, not only genetically, in terms of contamination and actually reshaping the way that forests can look through cross pollination and contamination, we're also looking at these ideas where creating tree plantations actually reduces destruction of native forests, whereas the reality is, even if you have a more dense wood with the loblolly pine, or you have a faster growing tree such as the eucalyptus or hybrid high-tech poplars, it increases the demand. It's statistically followable in Brazil and other places, it actually increases the demand. When the demand is increased, further encroachment upon forests happen. And so less native forests survive and more of them are destroyed, especially with the fact that globally tree plantations are recognized as forests, even though they are absolutely not forests. On international level, they are recognized as forests, and so they literally can disappear forests and still be recognized as them.
Absolutely. And psychologically, I think people are like, oh, it's green, it's growing, you know, it's good. So, yeah, I can see that being an extremely psychologically deceptive tactic on their part.
The economic incentive to do this is going to be greater, too. Like Grody pointed out, the demand, more people will sell their forests and have them clear cut, and they'll plant the GE trees.
Right. And so I want to mention a couple things also. So in the Southeast, even in Asheville, with the genetically engineered chestnut, we're looking in the Southeast and the Pacific Northwest, we're looking at government initiatives that are heavily funded to actually get the Southeast and the Pacific Northwest as havens for liquid biofuels, to be producing liquid biofuels, and an increase, we're looking to see actually an increase, especially in the Southeast, of biomass plants that can produce things into wood chips, such as eucalyptus and loblolly, and also incinerators here in the Southeast, in addition to the already current extraction that's happening to the Southeastern forest with the exports of wood pellets that are going to the UK. Department of Energy recently, in the last couple of months, released a draft environmental impact statement. And that impact statement was analyzing what it would look like on a small and commercialized scale if the Southeast started actually farming for biofuel production, because it's a very large initiative to start producing a lot of biofuels. And so not only we're looking at high-tech hybrids of poplars, we're looking and genetically engineered eucalyptus, poplar, loblolly pine for jet fuels, in addition to high-tech crops, switchgrass and other crops, to literally start creating fuels in the Southeast. And the same for poplars in the Pacific Northwest to be processed for liquid biofuels. Like over $80 million of funding, of government funding, has gone to universities to do the testing to try and push that initiative in the Pacific Northwest. And this is directly connected to GE trees, because right now they're processing high-tech hybrids, poplars, and the next step is genetically engineered, because if they can genetically engineer them successfully with herbicide resistance, then they have their perfect plantation that they can literally farm within 3 years harvest for liquid biofuels and biomass incineration.
3 years is an incredibly short amount of time for a tree. That's amazing. It must grow so fast. Like that doesn't seem right at all.
Well, now keep in mind, they don't need to be huge. They just need to have a lot of mass. So most of these trees that they're harvesting are barely 12 inches in diameter.
Right. Right, with the poplars that are going to be harvested within 3 years in the Pacific Northwest, they're going to be processed for liquid biofuels into a demonstration-sized biofuel plant that can, in Boardman, Oregon. And so they're looking to have a lot more of these all over the Pacific Northwest. But yes, BJ is absolutely right. It doesn't have to be large. It just has to have some mass.
Gotcha. Would you speak to the Action Camp, which will occur this September 24th through 27th in North Carolina? What can people do to get involved or help out with that?
Yeah. So my name is Ruddy, and I am the main coordinator of the Southeast Genetically Engineered Trees Action Camp that's happening September 24th to 27th. Pretty much, if folks are interested in getting activated on this issue, continuing the fight, because we need lots of people that are directly impacted on the ground, we have an application process. If you go to knowgetrees.org and fill out our application, we're accepting applicants into our action camp. Our action camp, if some folks are familiar with action camps, ours is fashioned in a similar style. We're going to be going over the dangers of genetically engineered trees, organizing tips, and we're going to jump straight into blockade tactics, direct action training. We're going to go over a little bit of climbing. We will go over histories of direct action. We're going to have a pretty heavy emphasis on the direct action and putting our bodies on the line component, because ArborGen right now has got the approval to commercialize genetically engineered loblolly in the Southeast without any public oversight, any public input, any government oversight from the USDA because of how it was genetically engineered. There's a loophole in the regulatory system in the USDA. So we are trying to organize folks from all over the Southeast. You don't even have to be a part of the Southeast to come. Our action camp will be near Asheville, North Carolina. We're able to provide travel stipends, and it doesn't cost anything. You just have to apply, and you'll hear back from us.
That's awesome. So it will be very close to where this radio show is broadcasting right now.
Yes. And September 28th, we'll be having an action on GE Trees, and we are inviting the public to that action, and we will be announcing the details of it very shortly.
Where could people find more about the information about that action?
At knowgetrees.org.
If people can't make it to this event, what can they do to help out? Like, do you need fundraising or supplies or support or anything like that?
Maybe both of us can answer that. BJ, you want to go first?
We can always use funds. But we can also especially use people to learn more about it, talk to their neighbors, talk to their family, talk to the people they work with. Try not to be a pain, but, you know, it's important that people know about this. You can join us on social media to find out more about it, Facebook and Twitter. We have a Facebook. You just put in the Indigenous Environmental Network and you'll find us there. We have about 130,000 followers now, or friends. I guess you call them friends. And we have 5 or 6 on our Twitter. Of course, we put out information about a whole host of issues that are going on right now that we're fighting. GDEP has a Facebook. And I think you also have, do we also have a Stop GE Trees Facebook, or is it just under GDEP? Ready?
I just found out today we do not have that.
We must get one. we must do that. Yeah. We're either on the front lines or in front of our computers, and you won't find us too many other places. But yeah, they can learn more about it. I mean, if you just Google GE Trees, I think the first 3 pages come up with all kinds of information that GDEP has put out for the last 20 years. They were the first ones to really sound the alarm. IAN and I got involved a couple years ago, so we're kind of youngsters in this, but some of the other people that we work with, or the IAN, you know, their staff, they've worked with Orin and Ann and GDEP for many years. And not just on this issue. But yeah, just people get out there. You know, just start learning about it. People don't have a lot of time, but just start spreading the word, sharing our posts, sharing our pages, sharing the knowgetrees.org with their friends. So back to you, Ready.
Yeah, we have a petition online that folks can sign that's in opposition to genetically engineered trees. We also have, in the last few months, we came out with, or not GDEP, but Rain Dancer Films released a synthetic forest. And so if folks want to help do film screenings in their area, that would also be really helpful. We're hoping to launch some film screenings in the fall if folks want to plug into that. And sending me an email, my email is ready@globaljusticeecologyproject.org. We can get you on all of our mailing lists, and you'll get announcements about the next events that we're having. Also, all tools in the toolbox. So in terms of fighting genetically engineered trees, everything from petition signing to various forms of direct action. We didn't get to talk about Brazil, but on March 5th, of 2015. Did you hear what happened in Brazil, William?
I didn't.
So March 5th, 2015 was International Women's Day, and 1,000 women from the MST, peasant folks, and other groups came together and went to Futura Genes operations where they were growing genetically engineered eucalyptus and absolutely destroyed the seedlings, causing Futura Gene major, major economic damage. Futura Gene is the corporation in Brazil that actually got the approval for the genetically engineered eucalyptus commercially. Simultaneously, people shut down the discussions and postponed the approval over a month. 300 people stormed the discussions and shut it down. And so various forms of direct action in the last year, or in the last 2 years, GGIP has done disruptions of ArborGen-sponsored events, as well as held in 2013. We helped organize one of the largest protests against genetically engineered trees at the Tree Biotech Conference in 2013, and we really hope to start building the resistance in a variety of fashions, because as organized and built up as this is, because these are university-led, state government, federally funded programs that have a lot of backing and a lot of force, there is state repression already that happens. We've been kicked out of places just for trying to give presentations. And so as much organized resistance in a variety of ways will be really, really helpful. And so if I could just also add to plug in, we have a genetically engineered trees tour called The Growing Threat in the Pacific Northwest happening from October 12th to 22nd. And it's going to be a speaking tour with a couple of surprise other things. But we hope that folks can either support us with that or support in any other way that they can.
For sure. That all is so f***ing cool. I did not know about the Brazil action. That really warms my heart a lot. And also this radio show gets broadcast in the Pacific Northwest, so hopefully people will hear about that as well. I don't have any other questions. Do you all have anything else you'd like to add?
No, just go to our website, ianearth.org. You can sign up for our newsletters as well. I also put out a GE Tree newsletter, plus I send out for the other issues that we work with. Come join us on Facebook. Come join the conversations. We like Twitter, okay, but it's hard to have a real dialogue in 140 characters or less. So, you know, we have a lot of activity that goes on there. And depending on what's said or what comments are made, you know, I usually just like people's comments. I don't argue with them unless they need argued with. But you get to know the community and how people are supporting us, and our followers help us too. They send us articles. They post articles in some of the other postings that we do. So, you know, just come join the community.
There are so many things that I feel like I didn't mention, but I think this is a great introduction, and I really am thankful that you gave us some time to talk on the show. Thank you, William.
Hell yeah. Ruddy Turnstone and BJ McNamara, thank you so much for coming on The Final Straw. This was an amazing interview and a lot of really good information.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate this. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And keep in touch, and I hope that all of the things go off with a bang, as it were, and yeah, all of that good stuff. We've been talking with BJ McManima and Ruddy Turnstone about the issue of genetically engineered trees and the impacts they have both environmentally and socially. The Action Camp, which is due to take place on September 24th through 27th, has a registration deadline very soon, so if you wish to participate in this amazing event, go to knowgetrees.org to register. Again, you can email our guest, Ruddy Turnstone, at RUDDY at globaljusticeecologyproject.org for particulars. For more on the Indigenous Environmental Network, you can visit ienearth.org. Stay tuned to knowgetrees.org also for the news pertaining to the action that's scheduled to be held on September 28th in Asheville, as well as for the Growing Threat Tour in the Pacific Northwest in October.
On next week's episode of The Final Straw, first, that's me, we'll be speaking with organizers involved in the Connecting European Struggles Conference in Malmö, Sweden, from September 18th to the 20th of 2015. The theme of the conference is Feminism in the Crisis, and we'll be bringing together autonomous anti-capitalist struggles from around Europe to discuss austerity, gender, immigration, care work, healthcare, and much, much more. More info in many languages can be found at connectingeuropeanstruggles.tumblr.com or on their Facebook page.
This first track is from the Russian metal group called Pay for Progress, entitled Awful Price, and it comes from their 2013 demo. This next track is off of Wash Away by Ragana. It came out earlier this year, and the track title is also Wash Away. And this last track is by Kohosh. It's called After Everything. It's off of their 2014 split with Adelitas.
Yeah.
You're listening to WSFM LP 103.3 in Asheville, North Carolina. This is The Final Straw, and I am William Goodenough. The show can also be heard on KXCF in Marshall, California, KWTF in Bodega Bay, California, KOWA LP in Olympia, Washington, WCRS LP in Columbus, Ohio, and on the pirate station Berkeley Liberation Radio in Berkeley. The show will later be archived at thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org for as long as the internet lasts us. You can email us at thefinalstrawradio@riseup.net, and you can send us snail mail at The Final Straw, care of Asheville FM, 864 Haywood Road, Asheville, North Carolina, 28806. This show is brought to you by Firestorm Books and Coffee. Located at 610 Haywood Road, Firestorm Books and Coffee is a worker-owned cooperative in Asheville specializing in offbeat, underground, and independent literature. Firestorm's full catalog of books and zines can be found online at firestorm.coop.
Next up is Onward Through the Fog with the indefatigable, indomitable, 12 times world wrestling champion, and all-around teddy bear, Jake. Strap in for 2 hours of rockin', suckin', rootin' tootin' tunes bound to get you groovin' like a record.